So we've got, if you just think of it, I mean, we're a, you know, a small junior mining company, but we're putting a gold asset into production. We are starting a production with our partner, with Talisker next week. August, we will be starting to mill material from Blue Lagoon and from the Dominion. And we're doing exploration on our copper, you know, the highest grade copper mine in the history of North America. And we will be doing exploration at our silver project. So there's, it's just like a lot going on.
We got Peter Espig, CEO, President of Nicola Mining. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me. And got a great view behind you. So we're both in a good place.
I don't know what happened to your view, but your view is good too. So are you on site today? Where are you?
No, I got back last night, but I was on site this week and it was pretty exciting.
You got a lot of stuff going on. What's new with you?
Yeah, you know, we're just in this really busy, exciting stage in the company right now. And so, you know, I've previously talked to you about the different assets we have and where we are right now, like just, you know, top of my fingers. So we've, you know, we start milling gold and silver next week. Last week, we started exploration on our copper asset. A week ago, we received the MIAB or the 5-year exploration permit for a silver mine. And previously in January, we announced that we received a 10-year mine extension on the silver mine. July 2nd, we will be ramping up production for our Dominion Gold Project, which is a very, very high gold project that we'll be putting in production and then shipping to us starting August. And July 9th, one of our partner, Blue Lagoon, we'll also have an open house on its project and we'll commence mining immediately after that, and also expects to be shipping to us in July. So we've got, if you just think of it, I mean, we're a, you know, a small junior mining company, but we're putting a gold asset into production. We are starting a production with our partner, with Talisker next week. August, we will be starting to mill material from Blue Lagoon and from the Dominion. And we're doing exploration on our copper, you know, the highest grade copper mine in the history of North America. And we will be doing exploration at our silver project. So there's, it's just like a lot going on.
Yeah, let's, you know, talk about the Treasure Mountain project first.
Sure. I mean, that, like, the thing, Treasure Mountain is, you know, a forgotten asset. And so we're not getting value for it. But just a little bit of background, I'll step back. So in 2012, Nicola Mining, which at that time was called Huldra Silver, had a market cap of 230 million. Coeur had just invested $5 million at a $200 million valuation based on the upside of the silver project that we have. Obviously, in what, you know, in 2013, silver went from $40 an ounce to $14.68 an ounce, and the Canadian dollar was dollar by US. So, one of the first things I did as a CEO was put that project into care and maintenance because it didn't make sense. We had a $12 Canadian cost per ounce of mining. It doesn't make sense to deplete your silver asset for $2 an ounce. So we felt that silver was going to go up. We put it in care and maintenance. We slowly, you know, we did soil sampling. We did like a lot of geochemical type of sampling. But we also, as you know, and like, or Steve, you know, I'm a cash flow guy. I don't like always raising money, exploration, raising money, exploration. So I like to keep a very, very tight wallet. And so we just didn't have the money or the bandwidth to do the exploration. But what we did is, you know, again, prior to doing the exploration, we wanted to extend the mine permit. So that's step one, because again, now we're doing exploration on a fully permitted mine. And we received our 5-year what's called a MIA, which is a 5-year carte blanche exploration permit, and we know where the targets are. So we will be doing, and Coeur, although yes, it's a fully permitted silver mine, Coeur back in 2012 was really excited about the backside. And when I looked at the backside of the mountains, and we did exploration, but there are multiple vein outcroppings. And so they referred to it as a VMS type of deposit. And they say that because we have, you know, anywhere between 0.5 gram gold to 2.5 grams gold at surface. This is veins outcroppings at surface to 750 to 7,000 grams silver, you know, 1% to 4% copper, 20% lead, 20% zinc. And we haven't tested for other metals. So we'll be doing exploration on that this year. And, you know, we'll hopefully find why Kuriga was so excited about the project back in 2012.
Yeah, a lot of stuff happening. Last time we spoke, I got really excited. Andy and I, we'd be full disclosure, Nikolai is not paying for this, but we both invested with our own funds. My kids are investors of Nikola Mine. So all the stuff that you said were going to happen, it seems like things are coming into place. Can you start with talking about the 10-year deal?
So the 10 years is a mine extension, right? So, and that's very strategic because, you know, it's in British Columbia, you don't want to lose your mine permit because, you know, it takes a long time to get to that permit. And so, you know, the infrastructure at Treasure Mountain, and there's a little bit similar like Craigmont, where one of the things that we did is we acquired the land. So where the camp is, we own that land. So we own, you know, we own 900 acres actually at Craigmont freehold. And then we own 40 acres freehold at Treasure Mountain. So our camp sits on land that we own. And it was historically a nature camp. We then, you know, the previous owners of Treasure Mountain had invested close to $40 million of infrastructure. That includes 4 levels of the mine. Only level 1 has had any mining activities. So level 2, level 3, level 4 are still like virgin territory, although all the infrastructure is there. The only thing is that, you know, we know that as part of the NI 43101, we know that we have a 43101 on level 1, on level 1 and level 2. Below that, less is known. The backside of the mountain, so getting to the exploration. So what we wanted is, you know, when you do an NPV or you look at the fundamentals or the present value of a project, you want to work it on a discounted, you know, cash flow, and you have your WAC and or your ratio of the discount. But if you don't have your mine permits could take 10 years. So we have that. So we've been, you know, and to get the MIA typically takes 2 years. So first we got the mine extension. So we've got our mine is fully permitted up until 2033, essentially. And then now we've got the 5-year exploration permit. So one of the things that we were always very adamant about, and, you know, you always have your silver bugs, like the conspiracists. And I don't necessarily buy into that. Get that the paper market is, you know, I'm a former investment banker, so I can see how things get manipulated. But the reality is that I'm not a conspiracist theorist when it comes to, you know, low silver prices. But what I am is that to go back into, to take the risk of restarting your operations or do exploration, we wanted to feel comfortable that silver was above $25 US. And we feel very comfortable that it's going to stay there, whether it goes to 50 or 60 or 100. I mean, that's all upside, right? But we are focused on the downside. And so we're reopening the underground this year, you know, maybe planning towards reopening the silver mine next year. But certainly we will be looking at exploration this summer at the Treasure Mountain. And it's beautiful. Like, there's silver veins all across. If you go to the website and you can see how the soil anomalies are, I mean, it's it There's something there. We just don't know what it is.
Well, take us there. We're not on the website. You've been there. We will see the website, but for those who are listening, what are you seeing when you, if you were to go show up, what do we find?
Well, so first of all, on the backside, one of the, and I've been to a lot of mine sites. One of the coolest things that I've ever seen is there's a vein that, so there's a waterfall, and the waterfall, I mean, it's not like a fish bear, like it's like this wide, right? It's like 8 inches across, but it goes over a silver vein. So you've got this glistening silver vein with a waterfall going over it. And that's the start. And then you go for like, and then you've got veining for a kilometer and a half. And if you look at the soil, like if you have like a narrow vein soil system. So if we look at the known mine, so what do we know about the historic mine? We know that it's very high grade. So, and we know that it's galena and sphalerite. So it's silver, lead, silver, zinc. But if you look at the backside, we know that it's not connected. And the soil area of where the soil lights up is a kilometer across a kilometer. But what we're seeing is we're seeing gold, silver, copper, lead, zinc. And now we're going to start testing for rare earths, because we just don't know what's there. But we know there's something there. And I'm not going to speculate what it is. I'm not a promoter, but we know that there's something below it that is driving the veins that you see at surface, because you can see the veins at surface, and also the soil anomalies.
So what do we know? We know that there's silver, lead, silver, zinc.
So we know that the mine is silver, lead, silver, zinc. Mm-hmm. We know the backside and the genesis of the investment that Coeur did back in 2012 was based on the backside upside of the mine. And they did it at a valuation of $200 million at that time. Yep. And so what they saw is they saw another mineralized event. And, you know, there's lots of mineralization in the entire region, right? So, you know, above, further north of us was one of the few platinum placer mines in BC history. So we know that above us, there's gold, you know, there's gold placer mines. We know that there's gold exploration. But just where we are, we have this round body that seems to be driven from underneath. It doesn't seem to be related to the current silver mine, because the current silver mine doesn't have gold or copper and, you know, other potential minerals, right? So at the back, what we see just your typical VMS, where we see gold, silver, copper, zinc, lead, and we haven't tested for any other minerals, but we certainly will, because we know that there's indium in the region, osmium. So those are things that we'll test going forward starting this summer.
That's exciting. And then you have...
Yeah, it's really exciting.
So what's going on with the new Craigmont Copper Project?
And that's the new Craigmont
next to, I think you said last time, it's located next to the Canada's largest copper mine ever. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's adjacent to Highland Valley Copper, which is the largest copper mine in the history of Canada. And I believe it's the fourth in the history of North America. But certainly, you know, one of the largest mines in North America. And the historic pit, which was a skarn, which we now know is driven by a porphyry system, we've started looking for the porphyry. And we spent last year doing, the year before, we spent 2-3 years of doing geophysical work. I mean, we're not just poking holes in the ground. We're doing the groundwork first. You see that a lot with companies that are typically raising money, drilling. Like you have to drill soon after you raise the money. But we've been pretty financially stable with our operational cash flow. So we've taken this, like, you know, we're building a company here, and we believe that, and, you know, I always say that people need to understand that we're not looking for the porphyry, because we basically have 1/3 of the land package of the largest copper mine in Canadian history beside us. which has 8, 9 very large porphyry systems greater than 4 billion pounds each. And so we could have more than one porphyry, right? But so we are looking for a porphyry, and that's what we're drilling for right now. So we've got, this summer, we've got 3 key targets. We're going to be drilling those. And the goal is to find a porphyry. A
lot of stuff happening this summer.
Yeah, and that's the exploration. And of course, then there's the operations. And, you know, interestingly, when we talked the last time, when I talked about, you know, the question came up, well, where do you see your revenues going, right? Because we're ramping up production here. And, you know, we thought, okay, June to June. So June of 2025 to June of 2026, we were like, oh, you know, the goal is 50 million. But we remember that 50 million in revenues and then, you know, at a 15, 18% profit margin. But remember that that was based on $2,500 gold. And we're not $2,500 gold. And so everything is changed now. And the mill, we're ramping up and we're seeing more. And this is something that is actually more macro in British Columbia. We're seeing a lot more projects getting permitted by the Ministry of Mining for bulk samples. And this is really good, right? Because, you know, it was a lot harder before, but we're kind of like the de facto, you know, airport for bulk samples in the province. So I can't really get into detail right now, but we've had a couple of bulk sample discussions, you know, over the past month that these are starting to move forward. And, you know, we could certainly look at our site as their destination. And so BC in general, mining is becoming, it's going through a renaissance right now where things that have, and, you know, again, in defending British Columbia, people are like, oh, it's impossible to get permits. It's possible to get permits. It isn't, it just takes time. And so now we're actually seeing these permits getting approved that were actually applied for 3 years ago for these bulk samples. And so it's just starting to, and of course, everybody's pressuring the government to get these permits approved because 3 years ago you had, you know, $2,500 gold and a stronger dollar. And now we're at $3,300 gold. And there's a big panic because people see the opportunity to not having to go to the market to raise money for their exploration program, to do a bulk sample, monetize it, and use that monetization for their exploration. So we're seeing that increase as well.
Love it. And then you got 30 mineral claims at Dominion Creek. What can you tell me about what's going on there?
Yeah. So we plan on putting Dominion into, so executing our, you know, extraction of our bulk sample. We plan on doing that July 2nd of this year. So to show you how aggressive we are, our permit allows us to start July 1st and we're in there the next day and we're going to be working. We've got our crews, we've got everything ready. You know, we're getting we're in the process of getting our camp, bridge, everything all set up so that come July 2nd, you know, so, you know, sometimes people talk about projects getting delayed a couple of years, like, you know, we're talking days for, if there are delays, there are days.
Wow. You guys got a lot going on. Is there any milestone that we should be looking for? I mean, we know that summer you got these things you talked about. What do you have planned for the rest of the year?
Well, I just gave you lots of plans. If you look at a timeline, so, you know, June 1st, copper exploration,
right?
Mid-July, silver. We'll start looking at the silver, right? So yeah. We go June, July, exploration, silver, copper, silver, then, you know, results coming out later for the copper later in the year. The silver results will start out with IP to kind of solidify where we're going to do our drilling. We'll reopen the mine. So that's like to look at what the condition is for the extraction. So that's the exploration side, but also mine side. On the milling side or the mining side, next week, so the week of June 15th, we plan on recommencing milling operations with our partner Talisker. And we plan on milling via our partnership, their material. July 2nd, we plan on commencing the production of Dominion. July 9th, Blue Lagoon has its open house. And thereafter, they're going to commence their mining. We then, in August, we start expecting to receive material from Dominion and Blue Lagoon. And then towards the end of the year, hopefully it's just going to be boring, like, you know, let's make money. And you know, because rock through the mill is money for everyone. And so that's kind of, and, you know, Dominion is, we own 75% of the economic interest. So that's great for us. We've got some bulk samples. We're also looking, so we're, you know, the mill is just getting full. And we want to get to, because one of the questions people ask is, well, are you going to, you know, apply for an amendment to your milling permit to increase the throughput? Because we're going to get full. Yeah. And my response is yes, but let's get full first and let's get good at being full at that size. And then after that, we'll look at increasing production. But, you know, if we increase the throughput, then, you know, we're a fairly major player.
Yeah. Peter's got a background also in finance. And that's one of the things that really drew me to you as a leader. You know, just, you're not just a rock guy, but you're well aware of that, but you're able to raise capital and you're all about the cash flow. Can you tell us a little bit about your financial philosophy one more time, just kind of for our listeners who are checking in the first time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was an executive at Goldman Sachs. But again, you know, people talk about the capital markets a lot. So when I was at Goldman and when I worked in private equity, I was more specialized on the debt side, principal finance, high yield, mezz finance, various finance structures. And, you know, when you do distress in the special sits at GS, and then after that, in private equity, and I was one of the pioneers of SPACs, and, you know, debt is good, but debt is dangerous. And so I always like to put the company in a position where you don't need to raise money. And I've brought this quote up to you before, but you know, one of the Japanese have a saying that says, you know, turkeys fly like eagles in a typhoon. And when the wind's blowing and things are good, it's pretty easy to raise money. But you need to put the company in a position where you don't need to raise money. And we were very creative. I mean, you know, we didn't talk today about a gravel pit or rock quarry or cement ready mix plan. The fact that we were a Trans Mountain Pipeline partner, these were all things to get the company to cash flow so that we didn't have to continue to raise hard money to keep the lights on. And so that's, so the philosophy, and that's why we haven't done a lot of exploration on Treasure Mountain, because we wanted to put the company into a position where we didn't need to raise money. And then, you know, because you fall into this cycle where it's like raise, you got to get the news out for drilling and it better be good. Otherwise the share price goes down and then you keep, you know, and you go into this like death spiral. And so we were very, very conservative to where we've gotten now. And now you're going to see the company become more and more aggressive because we're in a good position and we're able to utilize, you know, a good example is last year we did a, you know, we are the second largest shareholder of Blue Lagoon. Through, you know, we were able to allocate our capital. We are able to allocate our capital to get, you know, we didn't raise money to bring the Dominion project to the stage where we are now. We did it through our cash flow. So we did, you know, $3 million in upgrades at the mill. We didn't raise money for the $3 million in upgrades. We did it through our cash flow. So, you know, to be fiscally responsible, And there's nothing wrong with dilution, just to be clear. Accretive dilution is very good.
Right.
So, you know, Canadians sometimes they get asphyxiated on, oh, we're getting diluted. Dilution is great if it's accretive. But if you're always diluting for exploration, you don't know it's accretive because you don't have the results yet. So because of that, we've been very fiscally responsible.
Great. So can you tell us about the upside of what we could be finding in Nikola? I mean, for new investors who are just checking in, why? I mean, we talked about the cash flowing junior, the risk, not risk adverse, but yeah, like your money sound.
Sure.
But can you tell us about the upside of what we can find here in terms of when an investor pouring money into Nikola, what can we be doing?
Well, I would say this. I would say that when we get into production, and if you look at companies that ramp up production, they typically trade on a multiple of sales. And so if you look at the sales where we would, and again, we're not there today, but we start production the week of June 15th, right? So start following the week of June 15th, we start ramping up production. When we get to full production, you know, the mining companies, as they go into this production, they trade on a multiple of, there's two multiples that they really go on. And then there's a value derp. So one multiple is revenues and the other is EBITDA. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at what our sales multiple will be and our expected EBITDA, we're grossly undervalued based on those two multiples. On the other hand, you know, certain companies are valued on what minerals they have. I mean, there's companies valued that with very high valuations based on gold in the ground, copper in the ground, silver in the ground. And so that's another dynamic. And that's where you have the discovery. And that's where you get also big multiple increases. So if you take, you separate out the value, so you separate out the copper and you separate out the silver, just based on our operations, we're grossly undervalued. Now you add and you compound the potential of a copper discovery, which, there's very few, and I don't know of any, copper porphyry discoverers in the world on fully permitted copper mine sites. They're just very few and far in between. There's an incredible potential value there. For us going back to Treasure Mountain and going into area where Coeur in 2012 was willing to invest $5 million based on a $200 million valuation, our market cap right now is 75. So now we're going back into an area where, you know, was a genesis of people who know much more about silver than I or you do when it comes to exploring.
Yeah.
And we're going to be exploring that. So, you know, we could actually have the potential of two discoveries, and one in silver, one in copper, augmented by being valued on cash flow, and then utilizing that cash flow for future acquisitions, expansion, you know, even things like ShareBot. Like, I mean, there's a lot happening here that over the next 12 months, investors are really going to benefit.
Yeah, looking to following your story. Thanks for coming back on. If any listeners want to get in touch with you or have any questions, can you tell us your ticker and your website and how people can get a hold of you?
So our ticker is in Canada is TSXVNIM, so NIM. And in the United States, it's we trade on the OTCQB. We have, given where we are right now, though, we are considering a move to the NASDAQ, because once you get into cash flow, there's an exemption. So there's a NASDAQ exemption for companies that burn over $750,000 a year. We fall into that exemption to make it easier. Our US ticker is HUSIF. Holland, wow. US, go USA, International, France.
I love it. I love it. We will always be friends, Peter. I'm always a fan.
Yeah.
Well, Peter, great to have you again. Tell Bill I said hello. Good to see you.
Okay.
All
Thanks.
right.
We'll do it.